What's up, everybody? Welcome to Browner and the Lawhead. I'm John Browner, as always, joined by world-renowned comedian Jason Lawhead here on the Mighty 1090 ESPN, baby. We've got a pretty interesting show for you. If you're driving down the Petco for the game, you're fresh off a hot win last night, you're trying to cruise your way into another one by Joe Musgrove. If you are a NFL fan, you've got another awesome slate of games coming. And if you are a midweek video game watcher, you got a good Thursday night game. So we're going to go over the complete slate of NFL games. We're going to go over the Padres' big win and what they have going tonight. But first, Jason, what's up, brother?
What's up, brother? How you doing? It's a nice day. It's a nice day in San Diego. We're lucky.
It's not a nice day everywhere else.
No, we're lucky, man. You watch stuff, and I just got off the phone with a few friends, some comics I know that live out that way, and man. Hopefully, everybody that can get to cover, man, that thing. And why did we ever start putting weathermen on the ground? That was never needed. It's like, let's go out to John risking his life to state the obvious. John, what do you got? It's like, why did we ever need that? Why are they still there? It's a category 5. That just sounds terrible in anything. It's like, you know, whether it was cancer, whatever it is, category 5 is not good. It's like that, you know, what are we doing here? I mean,
argument that I have for this particular situation is, in 1970, yeah, you probably needed a man in a storm. In 1980, yeah, you probably needed a man in a storm. In 2010, bro, you don't need a man out there. You don't need a woman out there.
No.
We live in the age of technology. Drill something into the center of the street because there's a mass evacuation and no one's supposed to be on the street anyway, and shoot the video.
I know.
Or if you're CNN, if you're Fox News, if you're MSNBC, Breitbart, whoever you are, OAN, Newsmax, plug in with the Weather Channel. They're going to send a professional weather person out there in that, even though they shouldn't either. You don't need to send somebody who was covering a Trump rally last week in Omaha to Florida in the middle of a Category 5 where you've got them standing in the street when the wind is so strong, the human producer gets blown into the shot and past the actual reporter because the winds are so strong. Like, who has to die this to stop?
It's crazy. It's like they know it's coming. So they go in there, they set up these cameras anyway that are on like street corners because they know they want to get footage of how wicked this thing comes whipping through, you know, some street corridor or whatever. And then there's Ring cameras on homes now until those get blown out, you get to see as much. It's like that's all we have to be now. There doesn't have to be. And it's just like, what? Like the weather is almost like, if there was a comedy portion of the news, the weather's kind of it. It's kind of like, it's almost like that's a Benny Hill skit. Like just throwing a guy out there in a storming rain. It's like silent movie comedy. We're still doing this with weather. We're doing Chaplin bits with weathermen. I mean, it's like, what's happening?
It doesn't make, in modern day technology, if we can hit a comet 700 miles away with a rocket sent from NASA, you mean to tell me we can't put a camera in the eye of the storm on the ground where we don't have to risk a person's life to achieve the wind factor? Like, I get these storm chasers. If you want to do that, that's cool, bro. Make money doing it and call some of these news organizations so they don't have to send somebody out there. But the fact that there are people who are covering, you know, things in a rose garden last week that are now out there in this storm, it's remarkable to me. It's remarkable.
Yeah. Have you ever been to Florida? You've been to Florida, right? You've been to Florida.
I've unfortunately been to Florida multiple times.
Yeah, so I've been to Florida many times, especially in my youth. My parents used to take us there, and I've always loved Atlantic Coast, Florida.
I've been to Tampa, Tallahassee, and Miami.
Yeah, so I've been all over the state. Most recently, I was in my Tampa a couple of years ago, just a year and a half ago. And, but I always knew, even as a kid growing up in Ohio, just from watching the news back then and seeing, like, Hugo and Andrew and other ones, and always just thinking, like, I can never live down there because it's almost like it's just a Godzilla living out there. That it's just, when it gets angry, Godzilla's going to come ashore and he's just going to destroy stuff and he's going to go back in the ocean and you don't know the next time Godzilla's going to attack. And you're just like, I just don't know. God bless everybody there. I just don't know. Even then I was like, oh man, I could never live down there because of that. And it's just more and more are coming. And Godzilla, there's Godzilla's got a family out there, to as many as they come, right? He's just
Godzilla's taking his kids to Disney World.
Exactly. He's taking his kids to Disney World. That's funny, but it's just
wife and his kids.
That's scary, man. Like, you know, nowhere is perfect, but like that's why I was like, you know, if the Pacific Coast kills me, it'll probably be an invasion of war. I don't want to get killed by weather, though.
I just hope that. And again, you may be a global warming denier, and that's perfectly fine. But these hurricanes, they're coming more often than normal, and they're coming faster and harder than normal, and they're doing more damage than normal. Same thing for tornadoes in a place called Tornado Alley. And yet people continue to live there, and if you're going to do that, I just ask that you do yourself a favor and your loved ones a favor and be safe. If they tell you to evacuate. Like, when they tell you this has never happened before, I don't want to see a special of old Cletus sitting outside his trailer park going, I survived these things before. 94, nothing like 94. All right, Cletus, we'll never see him again.
Yeah, I mean, some of those people you can't help. There's people out there in jet skis right now, you know. There's people out there. Sometimes, and that's it's just like, you know, if they can't look out the window and notice, like, but, you know, that's kind of inbred into the idea of living there. It's kind of part of the deal a lot, especially the Floridians, not the people that move there so much, like, you know, but the Floridians, it's in there. Like, some people have, like, you know, hurricane parties. They batten down. They bring people up. They get over there. They play, you know, drinking games while they're boarded up. It's crazy, dude.
So, yeah, that is causing major delays to NFL games that were supposed to occur. They're now being moved around. We're going to get to some of those things. But back to the Padres' big win last night. Alfaro gets a unexcusable pass ball, but then comes in, and I'm going to try to pull it up here, comes in and delivers at the end with the walk-off, which was absolutely fantastic and what you love to see in a situation like that. I know I'm probably going to get in trouble for playing this, but guess what? I don't care, y'all. Hold on.
Yeah, I mean. There it is.
That's what it looks like.
Good eye. And, you know, it's kind of fitting that he takes a ball four, uses the good eye because, you know, he was back there behind the dish. He lets the ball go by. But what I like about that win is that they did it in kind of playoff fashion. And what they did is the mistakes they made, you know, then there was the wild pitch, but they were able to hang on and not let that run come through. And, you know, Snell gave them the kind of start that wins postseason games. They made a couple of errors. They got to button things up. But at the end of the day, the Dodgers were playing that game like a playoff game. And the Dodgers were able to, you know, the Dodgers were able to take advantage of that error and that pass ball to get that run across like a good team does, like a good team trying to win a close game and an important game does. And the Padres were still able to correct the mistake, you know, the wild pitch. Then they keep the guys on. They get out of the inning. And Hader, you can't really, you know, he gives up the leadoff double. Then he strikes out Freeman with Turner on base. And he's got himself a path to get that close and that save. So they kind of won it in a couple of different ways that they almost let it slip through. I think it's a huge win for what they're focusing on, which is next month. And I think it says something to the Dodgers to say, look, you know, we could be in a dogfight with anybody, but hey, the Padres aren't that old team we used to whip on.
I think last night's game, and I said this on the Kaplan and Crew show, and I think I said it here yesterday as well. There's this thing that, oh, the Dodgers are going to lay down and because they've got it sewed up already and they just want to kind of get to the end of the season, so they're going to be saving guys. No, they're not. No, they are not. That last night's win, the Padres took that game. With all the errors that were made, all the mistakes against such a good team, the amount of pitches that the Dodgers batters were taking, I think Blake Snell had 97 pitches through five innings. They were working out there.
You want to know?
And the Padres beat them.
Yeah.
The Padres beat them in a moment that they were trying to win that game. So if you are, and I was saying this earlier too, if you're looking for a silver lining in the horrible record the Padres have with the Dodgers, there's now been multiple occasions where Padre pitching has gotten the better of that monster lineup. Now, it's not consistent enough for you to feel comfortable with it, but I've seen Blake Snell do it. I've seen Yu Darvish do it. I haven't seen Joe Musgrove do it, but I've seen Mike Clevinger do it. So you've got three guys who we've seen it, and Joe Musgrove's got his opportunity tonight to go out there and show that Dodger lineup. Yeah, you guys are good, but we ready for you. And they're tuned in. They're locked in. The Padres are playing playoff-level baseball, so that intensity is there. And if you're the other team, when the intensity is there as a competitor, you rile it up because this is why you play. This is what you do it for. And so I thought last night was a fantastic victory for the Padres.
Absolutely. Especially when Manny couldn't be the guy to come through in those moments. He had chances to come through late, bases, you know, guy on third twice with one out. All he got to do is hit a fly ball, get a run home, right? He strikes out both times. So I think a lot of the times in a game like that, that would just be a knife, the sword to your, you know, side and go, oh man, we're not going to win this game against a team like this if we can't get Manny. And then they are able to do it. And nothing tells you more that the Dodgers were trying to win that game in a different way than they won games all year. If this was any other kind of game, Anderson's not coming out of that game. 71 pitches. He had retired 15 in a row. Right. He was humming. He would have gone to the seventh. But what Roberts showed you last night is that they were playing in the playoff design. If you can get them out through six with 71 pitches, well, we maybe can pitch them on shorter rest, or we can bring them in for a longer stint, because playoff strategy is different. And we're going to go with our seventh inning guy, eighth inning guy, ninth inning guy, and see what. So he was managing in a way that was game one of a playoff series. And so they're going to come out even hungrier tonight in game two. They're seeing this, I think, and because they have to start putting themselves to even little tests, even if it's in their own clubhouse. Like, guys, you know, I don't care what the Padres are thinking. We're playing this like it's a three-game playoff series right now. And for some screwy reason, we got to win all three in San Diego, right? Like, so they can be playing those kind of games with themselves. And I think at least they're managing that way. And so it's a great win. And Snell was the kind of start that it would have been a shame had they lost that the other way around last night, 4-3, because then you're looking at going, man, you can't waste starts like that from a guy like that.
Again, it goes back to what I was saying initially. When the intensity is there, the other team's not going to back, especially a team of that caliber. They will rise to the occasion because for them in their dugout, they don't get that a lot. Because of where they are with their record, you play Arizona, that energy ain't there. You play San Francisco at this time of the year, that energy's not there. Colorado, that energy's not there. You go down to Petco, or they come to you, that energy is there because they are still fighting for a playoff spot. And so it's good to see in a hard-fought game the Padres best the Dodgers, because to get where they want to go, you're going to have to do that four times in a playoff series. And I'm telling you, man, I'm here for it. And so we've got another one tonight. Joe Musgrove's going up against, I think it's Julio Arias, who's got a 2.0 ERA so far this season against the Padres. And Joe Musgrove's got he's 0-2 with a 5-run ERA. So this is why they paid you, big fella. I said this earlier. I'm going to repeat it again here for the people who didn't hear it. This is why they paid you. This is why they cut you the big check for days like this, for nights like this. You guys have a ton of momentum. You've won a couple of series in a row. You've got a good rhythm going about you. Continue the starting pitching. Pass the baton. Blake Snell's giving it to you. Now, you be ready to give it to Manaea tomorrow, who's going to give up 15 runs. So I think we're in a good place. So we'll see how it goes. But let's talk about tomorrow night. And not the Dodge, not the third game, where again, Manaea is going to give up more runs than I would. We've got what, you know, at the start of this season would have been a premier matchup for Thursday Night Football. And yet here we are now with an undefeated Miami and a 1-2 Cincinnati team, which if people told you the record would have been reversed, you would have believed it. But nonetheless, you've got Joe Burrow, Ja'Marr Chase against Tua and Tyreek Hill and Jalen Waddle and what they're doing with their new coach and their new offense against a team that really seems to be finding their footing in Cincinnati. Tomorrow's game, who do you like, Jason?
Well, I like Cincinnati because I think that they've, you know, they could just as very well be an ugly 3-0 and we'd be saying, well, they looked pretty good against the Jets though, but they're just, without even playing any differently, they're just an ugly 1-2 because of the first two losses just were not them. I think the Jets, they came back to earth a little bit. The Jets also did a little bit, but Miami played a very physical football game to go to 3-0. And, you know, I just think that that's is going to catch up to him. I think Burrow's coming off of a nice, clean game. Cincinnati's starting to feel good moving forward about how they're playing more. They're at home, which is favorable. They don't have to travel on the short week from Florida. I just think that you know, Buffalo game is taking a lot of physicality to win. And I think, you know, Cincinnati, much like they were last year, probably just starts fine tuning as the season goes on. I like the Bengals probably mostly because I think the short week favors them off the game they came off of, and kind of, you know, we saw it with the Chiefs going into Indy. I just think Miami's due for that kind of game. And this is probably the time on the schedule where they'll be the most vulnerable.
The Dolphins are favored by
They're 3-0 and they've beat everybody every which way but loose. They've won by stifling the Patriots. They won by a big comeback type of win against Baltimore, who had a big lead. They won, you know, here in a slugfest, low scoring game against the top team who's supposed to win it all. So yeah, I mean, that doesn't surprise me, but I'd say take them Bengals in the money line.
I mean, if you're looking at this from a betting perspective, like, I think this is a statement game for Cincinnati. So I think that they're definitely going to be able to take advantage of that Dolphins secondary because that's what they do. Now, Miami's pass rush has been solid. Oh. It hasn't been what other teams' pass rush has been. It has not the Cowboys' pass rush, but it's been a solid pass rush, and Joe Burrow does get sacked a lot. So if you can somehow find a way for Joe Burrow to not get sacked 5 or 6 times, but two or three, I think Cincinnati will run away with this thing.
Yeah, they've got to be the certain kind of sacks. So Burrow will take 5 or 6 sacks in a game, and if they're not really effective sacks that blow a play up, he'll survive them. And Cincinnati seems to survive those. So if they, and I agree, it's going to be one in the pass rush, and if that defense can make the big plays to let the offense kind of settle in and go on the road after that game they had against Buffalo, because I that's where I think it is. I think you have to gonna have to blow up some plays on Burrow with the pass rush, whether it's hitting them in the pass that turns into an interception, knocking a ball loose, putting them deep, something on a fourth down, go for a big sack that blows up a drive. But I just like where Cincinnati is this Thursday against Miami with all things being said. I mean, if it was a Sunday game, different on the road, I might feel different.
I think the short week and what you spoke of before is really vital in this particular situation. That game was a dogfight against Buffalo. And now you roll into a game against Cincinnati, a very formidable opponent offensively, that can put up points. I think this is going to be a huge test for Miami. If Miami's for real, they win this game. If there is a question to be developed about them, I think it will come from this game. So we'll see. In breaking news that at this point in time isn't breaking, but you guys know how we get down on the show. Joey Bosa, and what I guess some people aren't shocked by this, Joey Bosa may be out for the season. He may be joining Rashawn Slater, Chargers left tackle, star left tackle, maybe joined by their star pass rusher on the injured reserve, because Joey Bosa has been put on the injured reserve for the what appears to be a season-ending hamstring injury, or groin injury, which leads you to believe he must have torn that thing off the bone. Because at first they were saying it was going to get reevaluated, and now they're saying they have put him on injured reserve. So we're going to go through all the games this weekend. We're going to give you numbers. We're going to give you names. We're going to give you some funny back and forth, depending on how this goes. John Browner, Jason Lawhead, Monday through Wednesday. It's our Friday on the Browner and Lawhead show here on the Mighty 290 ESPN. Browner and Lawhead, second half of the show. If you're headed down to the Padres game and you missed what we were talking about before, head over to the iTunes podcast store. Head over to YouTube, and you guys can like, share, and subscribe to the show where we talked about last night's game and what we think about today's game as you guys head down there. We also talked about the Hurricane Ian. I think it's Ian or Ian. Ian that's barreling down on Florida as a Category 5. And what they're saying now is that the flooding is what will be catastrophic and not necessarily the winds, which when you think of a hurricane, you think of the wind far before you think of any actual flooding. But they say the flooding is what's going to take lives. So we talked a little bit about that. We also talked about the Thursday night football game that's coming up and what's on the line there. And we're going to go through some of these weekend games just to kind of give you guys a catch up, because you know we're Monday through Wednesday, 6 to 7 p.m. Your favorite show that you didn't know was your favorite show, John Brown and Jason Lawhead. We're going to go down some of these games, Jason. We're going to start with the Arizona Cardinals against the Carolina Panthers. Mm-hmm. Carolina is getting a point and a half. I don't know why you would give a point and a half, but Arizona being favored in the game, I didn't know how that was going to happen so soon this season, because they have looked pretty terrible with the exception of a fourth quarter against Carolina, who, by the way, there was so much fanfare made of Baker Mayfield finally finding another team and finally, you know, getting his opportunity unchained, so to speak, as he likes to call it. He's been pathetic, man.
Yeah, he's been bad.
He's been pathetic.
Yeah, they've been lucky to just be in hanging in any of these games they've been in. When you look at his numbers, I mean, McCaffrey's obviously a weapon. Their mm-hmm. defense has been able to hold up.
Also, didn't practice today.
Yeah, so I mean, this game is going to be big because obviously Murray, Oklahoma, the whole nine yards here between these last two prodigies that we're coming out of the same place. So that maybe are, you know, at least Baker's away from Cleveland now, and now he's trying to be embraced in Carolina, and maybe, you know, the honeymoon with Kyler is starting to, you know, wear on some people, but depending big time on how this season goes with the Cardinals. So this is a pivotal full game for both of these guys to kind of, you know, either keep those Carolina fans. Yeah. Kyler, I would love having him. And for Baker to say, hey, like, you know, love me, Carolina, because that'll wear off quick too. If he's 1-3, 1-4, 1-5, and all of a sudden he's throwing for 51% and, you know, that's not gonna win over the fans. They're just gonna say, no wonder this guy doesn't have a contract. Let's get somebody new.
As much as there has been so much conversation over a guy like Baker Mayfield, I'm not shocked he hasn't been good. I'm really not. I thought having Christian McCaffrey back and healthy would be able to kind of take the pressure off of him. But then you remember he had Nick Chubb, right? You remember he had Nick Chubb. He had Odell Beckham Jr.
Njoku, who's a great tight end. Njoku, who's a, you know, yeah.
He had Njoku.
Yeah.
And, you know, if you need any indication, look at what Njoku's doing now. Like, right? He was dominating last week. So I'm done with him. I'm glad that this is happening to him. So now we can stop talking about. He's like the Cowboys for me at this point. I want to see him do bad so I can stop talking about him, but that hasn't worked out for me as far as the Cowboys go. The Patriots against the Green Bay Packers. This game really doesn't need much discussion. Mm-mm. This is going to be ugly. The Patriots can't seem to figure out what's going on with their offense, but ironically, neither can the Green Bay Packers. But the Packers are favored. I mean, the Packers are 10-point underdogs.
No, they're 10-point favorites. Packers
in this game. No, the Patriots.
Oh,
are
right,
10-point.
Right, yeah,
yeah.
But,
yeah, yeah,
yeah. The Packers would have to lay a total egg to lose this game, in my opinion, with the way these two teams look.
Massive.
Yeah, I mean, I don't care how much they're struggling with their offense.
This leaves me again to say the exact same thing. I don't trust where the Packers are with their offense right now. So I'm not saying that there's going to be an upset, but I will tell you this. I wouldn't be shocked if the Patriots found a way to win this game.
Yeah, I mean, they still have Belichick, and they still have, you know, guys that have a lot of pride there. And, like, anything can happen in the NFL. Like I said, I still think the Packers would have to lay an egg on Sunday and kind of be, what is wrong with this team type of performance? You know, I just don't think the Patriots overall is a very good football team yet. Maybe they'll get better, but, you know, I like the Packers.
I think that.
Hold on. Did you go? Did we go out?
Okay.
Did we go out?
No. I'm getting like a massive, a little insight on what's happening to me, people. I've got a lot going on, and I'm trying to, you know, juggle these things all at once. And these people don't understand there's a time and a place that they've been told to only do things, and they're not listening. So, up next. Miami, Cincinnati, we've already been over. New Orleans, Minnesota, this game is in London. I don't care about this. I really don't. The Vikings are a division game for me, of a division team for me. The Saints have been terrible. Jameis Winston seems to have a massive back issue. The Saints receivers have been really a revelation so far, but this game doesn't really tickle my fancy in London. Sorry, y'all.
No. I think that Browns-Falcons game is interesting because the way the Falcons have been scrappy, the way they've been consistent scoring points, they're at home. This is kind of a big kind of moment for Mariota to be able to say, hey, look, we're not going to just lay down and lose. So for the Browns to be able to have that win-loss record that they want when Watson gets back, vital game for them not to let down, not to let one slip by, and not to take the Falcons lightly. But, I'm a little leery of that football game. A lot of Browns fans are like, dude, we're 3-1 after the Falcons. I'm like, relax. Take it easy. So that's a good football game there. I like the Browns to win it, but I think it's going to be a lot closer, and I think that the Falcons are going to play a much better game than people think that they'll play against Cleveland. Seahawks, Lions, I got no interest in that. I mean, you know.
The Cleveland Atlanta game, after seeing what Patrick Patterson was able to do this weekend, I think Atlanta's a real threat. I like what they've been able to do so far. And with Myles Garrett's car accident, let's talk about this for a second. It appears that Myles Garrett was in an accident where his Porsche flipped over multiple times and apparently had a female passenger. They said there was no drugs involved and no alcohol involved. So it just appears to be a young, rich man with a hot chick driving too fast. But he appears to have they say he's out for the game or it hasn't been ruled yet? Because I thought
no, he
I
hasn't been
when they say he was out.
I think he said he's still going to try to play. They're going to evaluate him later in the week. He said he's still going to try to play. I think that the smart money would be that you would just let him see doctors, let him get x-ray, let him just rest and maybe not play. But I think the defense needs him in the long haul. So if it means don't play Sunday, don't play Sunday. But if he's just like, you know, I mean, the guy looks like Hercules. I mean, if he's doing drugs, the only ones he's doing is steroids.
Right.
He's a level-headed guy that comes to work and works hard. And, you know, he's getting double teamed and held all day long. The guy, you know, so Yeah, I think that at the end of the day, I did a joke. I go, he's gonna be fine, but the roadie hits out for the season. They gotta fix that thing. That's how big this dude is. But, the road's gonna be wiped out for the season. They gotta get construction out there. Yeah, it's good that they're both okay, which is most of all. But I've heard some reports. Some people have seen him, you know, driving around town. He's known to, you know, go out and have some fun in his vehicles, which hopefully this teaches him that, you know, life is fleeting, man, that, you know, he could have never been able to walk again. You don't know when you're rolling your car. At that point, rolling your car isn't just, you know, somebody sideswiping you or a fender bender or something at an intersection. That's
right.
That's you're flirting with all kinds of future. You know, if you survive it, you're flirting, you know, you're playing a more than one bullet roulette there. You know, you're playing like a three bullet roulette there when you're talking about what could happen. So hopefully, you know. Never.
Tennessee, Indiana.
But a guy that big in a cockpit that small doesn't matter, you know? Anyway, yeah.
Go ahead. That's true. Tennessee, you know, Indianapolis.
Guy, yeah.
I don't have any affinity for this. I don't think the Titans are good. I don't think the Colts are good. This is one of those AFC South games where you go,
it's a big game for them.
Got to win it, but then you end up
right
sitting there. Well, yeah, for these two teams, this is like the Raiders last week. The loser of this game, it's over for you. I mean, it's early, granted, but it's probably over for you because Jacksonville looks like they've found what they want to do with their quarterback and their coach. Tennessee has Derrick Henry, and that's really it. And Indianapolis has Jonathan Taylor, and that's really been it so far for them this season. I mean, they've looked bad in a bunch of parts, in a bunch of ways. So the 3.5-point favorite being Tennessee, that doesn't tickle me either way. So we've got Chicago and the Giants, another 3.5. The Giants are favored by 3.5. I think the Bears are going to win this game after watching the Giants on Monday night, really not being able to figure out a Cowboy offense that, you know, with a stationary quarterback and a not so positive run game. Chicago Bears, Khalil Herbert, one player, has more rushing yards than six different teams. So I think you're going to see the Bears run the ball 40 times. There's a lot of talk about Justin Fields being terrible and throwing interceptions and only throwing 11 times a game. He might only throw eight. He might only throw five because they're going to run all over the Giants. And I think this is, you'll start to see a trend develop with the Chicago Bears of running the football. So I like the Bears in that game.
This is going to be one in field position. These two teams is going to be able to, who can dictate, you know, who can get it into the better field position and who can constantly put the other team in the worst, in my opinion. But I think that the Giants offense became pretty predictable. When you look at it, you just don't get beat on the back end by the receivers. Know that Jones, if he is going to run, he can only run so far before you can come up and tackle him once he crosses that line of scrimmage and he can't throw it over your head. You know, Barkley, yes, he's playing better, but and they'll maybe get that ball, you know, into the 30 or towards the red zone, but then their offense becomes really one-dimensional because, you know, once the back of the end zone is the back of the play, they have a hard time making good decisions and being able to really execute sound football players to get the ball in the end zone if Barkley doesn't.
And they just lost.
Right, and if Barkley doesn't break one loose from 75 yards, they have a hard time getting in the end zone. I like the Bears.
Buffalo and Baltimore. Buffalo and Baltimore is a very interesting game. Buffalo is favored by 3.5 over Baltimore, which I find that to be interesting. I think this is the game of the week.
Oh, yeah, this could
do it all Josh Allen against
This could be the game why who has home field advantage over who at some point. This could be the reason, the tiebreaker. This could be one of the reasons why the Ravens either have home field in this game in the playoffs or the Bills have home field if these two teams met in the playoffs. Huge game. I mean, that's all right.
Struggling with so many things.
You know,
I love – I love this game. I'm going to sit down and watch every snap of this game because I honestly believe, this is an MVP battle. I think the MVP is going to come down to Josh Allen and Lamar Jackson. I think Lamar Jackson is going to be in this because this is a money situation for him. Lamar Jackson needs to show up with a statistical season running and passing that we haven't seen in the history of the NFL because he's trying to get money we haven't seen in the history of the NFL. And so this will be a huge statement if the Baltimore Ravens can walk out with a win at home versus Buffalo and you see huge stats from Lamar Jackson because the Buffalo defense, their pass rush is elite.
Yeah, they're going to make them run, and they're going to make them run into throwing quickly into traffic. And can those DBs make big plays? This is a huge game. I think it's a huge game for Lamar when it comes to, you're right, the contract, the kind of the, you know, how he's seen, how he's viewed. Because if fast, furious Buffalo Bills defense gets to him, and that's the difference in the game, then there's going to always, the pundits are going to love to come out and just start, you know, chopping down at that narrative. Because then they'll say, well, you look at what he's doing against a playoff team that comes out and, So huge for him. Allen can get away with it because the way Buffalo kind of just ebbs and flows, and, you know, he'll have the excuses to lean on where they're hurt in situations and they're a little banged up or whatnot. But, I'm going to be watching, obviously, Browns Falcons, but I'm going to keep an ear to that one, obviously, because I think it's going to be us and the Ravens down the stretches, and we'll see if the Bengals have that sophomore jinx or if they're in the mix too. But it's going to be a great game.
Yeah, I agree. I couldn't agree.
That's a
more.
Toss-up. I wouldn't put money on that one.
I'm watching that one. Mm-hmm. I'm not putting any money on that one. That's in the season, there are certain games where you just want to watch them.
Yep.
This is one of those pivotal games where I want to watch them because, like I said, I believe these are the two MVP candidates that I think that will be there at the end of the year. Obviously, barring injury. The Chargers and playing the Texans, no one cares about this game. And I mean, literally no one cares about this game because, as you saw, the Chargers have absolutely no fans in Los Angeles. When you are giving away $10, not giving away, but you're selling $10 tickets on these brokerage sites, and you can't get people to buy the tickets to watch the Jacksonville Jaguars play the Los Angeles Chargers. So good for them. Ha ha, Dean, you lose again. Even though I root for the Chargers and Herbert. Seattle against Detroit. Detroit's playing better. Seattle's disgustingly horrible. Geno Smith, the slipper's off. No thanks. I don't care about that.
Yeah.
The Jets are getting Zach Wilson back. But again, I don't want to watch Mitch Trubisky, so I have no interest in that. The game I think that is going to surprise people, Jacksonville, Philadelphia.
Oh, yeah.
I didn't think Jacksonville would be this good this fast. But I think Jacksonville will give Philadelphia a run for their money. What do you think? Because this is a Doug Peterson going back to Philadelphia where he won a Super Bowl.
Oh, yeah. And he kind of was the guy that really was kind of the advocate for Jalen Hurts, and that got him into kind of some hot water with the Carson Wentz side of the argument and who wanted that, from whether it was the fan base to people ownership. And so it's funny, but he left a good thing in Philadelphia, obviously. Two different kind of contrast styles, though. Two different quarterbacks, two different ways to do this. I think, you know, Jacksonville will rely more on the traditional Lawrence throwing it and the running game, whereas Hurts is a three-headed monster of it all. You know, they can run without Hurts. They can run with Hurts. They can throw with Hurts. They can get a lot of action that is hard to defend. And I like both of these teams. I like what they've done so far in this season and how they've won and the games. You know, so
yeah,
you know, this is as close to a, you know, Jacksonville's, you know, right there, 2-1. So this is as close to a market. I mean, who would have thought? Like, if you would have said, you know, next year, week 4,
you know, early last year or something, you know, week four next year, Jaguars against the Philadelphia for Jaguars, like maybe, you know, top Eagles. Five power ranking in the NFL. You'd be like, whatever, you're out of your mind. Jaguars are a mess. Phillies are,
point favorite. So that jumps out at me a lot that Vegas does not necessarily believe in Jacksonville. But I think they're going to find out what the Chargers found out, that these guys can play. Like, they're serious.
Yeah.
I know the Chargers were hurting all that, but Jacksonville can score.
Yeah, they can score points. And that's given a lot of – I think that's given a lot of credit to that Eagles defense, and maybe so, and at home. Jacksonville, you know, now – this is the first time, Lawrence, any of them have, now Jacksonville isn't that cute little – hey, they look, Jacksonville beat somebody 1 week. There's kind of a light right on them a little bit. Like, hey, you're good now, Jacksonville. Now mm-hmm. go to Philly and do this. And everybody's watching. And guess what? Even though it's not a primetime game, everybody in the NFL is watching. So many people are interested in this game. And so that's going to be a test. Can mm-hmm. Jacksonville go in there with the guys they got and answer that bell? Because the Eagles won't feel that because they're at home. They're 3-0, and they were a playoff team last year. They know they're not a fluke. Teams, guys like that already believed they could go to the playoffs last year. Now they're just confident, and they're beaming, and they're going to be, you know, coming with a full head of steam. So maybe that 6.5 will pay off, but I think it's going to be a good game.
We've got a big-time weekend slate that we just talked about. I'm not going to talk about the Commanders and the Cowboys because I don't care about right. that. I don't think Jason does mm-hmm. either. So we got a big-time weekend that we just went through with you guys. But, again, don't forget, we're back with you on Monday. But until then, Padres, Dodgers, go down there, boo the hell out of the Dodgers, and let's try to pull another win or two out of this series and send the Dodgers home packing. Till next week, I'm John Browner. That's Jason Lawhead. We are out of here.
Peace.
Peace.